This is interview number 3, recorded on November 10th, 1980, with Margie McSwain for the Rosie the Riveter Revisited project, recorded in her home in East Los Angeles.
Brains, like we used to say, you know.
That I thought of after we stopped last time and then in driving today, that I thought I'd like to start with before we continued on. First of all, I wanted to ask you about when you were still at Lockheed before you made the changeover, the relationship between the Mexican workers and the Anglo workers. Your closest associate there was Jeanette, who was Italian. But, for instance, the other people that you would associate with at Lockheed, or you talked about Jeanette having a party and the young man that you had a crush on and dated for a while. Was he Anglo?
No, Mr. His name was Pruitt. Pruitt. Yes, I would say he was Anglo, yes.
Because I was just curious, because so much of your social activity revolved around the clubs, which were actually Mexican. To what extent there was, and to what extent your social life was with Anglos, or the extent to which it was primarily with other Mexicans.
I think that as I broke away from the clubs, I think I experienced more mixture with other. There was always a little bit here and there, but I think yes, I broke away from the clubs more so, because during the war, that's when the clubs just went down the drain.
So in other words, during the war, you had increasing contact with Anglos and
right, more than you would have before. Yes, yes, much more.
Now, which brought up the question that I think we didn't get on a tape, too, was about your husband and his name, which is such an Anglo-Saxon name.
Yes.
Though, in fact, he also is Mexican descent.
Right.
Now, what was his family background?
His grandfather, shall I say, was the son of a Scottish parents, and they had two boys, Alan and Alex. And Alan and I forget the other name. Anyway, they came, one stayed in Canada, I think it was, and the other one came to Mexico. And he married a Mexican woman there and had my father-in-law. And that's where the name comes from. And this lady, this cousin, I guess, in a roundabout way, went through a whole family history. And then she sent us a copy of the whole thing. And that's how we found out that. That's where the name comes from, McSwain. And he had a saloon, so to speak, and then they have the picture and then the name right over it, McSwain.
In Canada?
No, in Mexico. This one that, Alan, the one that my husband's grandfather.
But were they then accepted in the community as Mexicans and viewed?
He says, yeah, that he was a lender and everything was done in that saloon. And that's where my father-in-law, I guess, got the background to be a barber because, you know, everything was done. That's according to that write-up.
Because then the other thing I wanted to ask you was even before you were married and your husband went overseas, he was already involved in the motion picture business as an extra. How did he get into that? Because it seems like your whole family is became somewhat connected with entertainment, your sons later and
When he was growing up, see, he came over here, I asked him, he said he must have been about 11, 12 when he came from Texas over here. And as he was going to school, and when he got out of school, his cousin had a small-time costume shop. And these people would come and rent costumes from him there. And one man was in charge, more or less, of recruiting when they had a cattle call. He would get workers. And he got friendly. He'd come there to the barber shop. He got friendly with my husband and with his family that lived directly across the street from the shop. And he started getting him interested and getting him jobs. And
so he was actually still in high school then when he started?
When he started, yes. And then he stayed on working even until we got married. He worked. In fact, he wasn't here when my first son was born. He was away on location.
So he would do this whenever he could. I mean, was this his primary
At first. Of course, like he says, he worked in a lot of odd jobs. He worked famous bus that takes tourists around. I forget the name. It's a famous one. He worked for them for a while, and he worked in a dress shop cutting emblems. And he did a lot of stuff like that. But when I knew him, he was working in pictures, period, when I met him.
And was this something he wanted to pursue and stay in?
Well, it was lucrative at the time. He'd make enough money, and sometimes he'd work in at one period, he was working in three different studios at one time, and he'd sleep on the set. Hmm. He'd go from one to the other, and he says, till one day he was driving home from the studio, and he could swear people were crossing in front of him, he'd put the brakes. He realized he needed rest, and he quit it. But he stayed on in pictures. He didn't quit pictures till my son must have been about, I'd say 3-4 months old. We uh-huh. went into business in that shop that uh-huh. I tell you, malt shop.
Yeah.
And that's when he quit pictures.
Now, did he want to get into acting, or was he interested primarily in remaining as an extra?
As an extra. He made quite well, uh-huh. bits and stuff like that, but he never aspired to be a big-time actor. Really, as a bit actor, he did a lot of that.
What sorts of roles would he play?
You name it. He didn't care. He'd be a savage one day. Next time he might be a chauffeur, mm-hmm. like he worked in the, the names escape me, and they show it on TV quite often. He's the chauffeur, and you see him clear as day, and then he worked in those Casper pictures, and the one with Marta Torin, I believe. You see him dancing in the background. Cecil? He didn't care. He wasn't picky. He could take the role. If it was paid him, he'd take it.
But he wasn't always cast, for instance, as either Mexican
no,
or Indian.
No.
He had a range of roles.
Yes.
The other thing I wanted to ask, and then we'll get into your leaving and going to Allen's, was in terms of, even though this will be before you were married, mm-hmm. I forgot to ask you earlier in terms of menstruation, but I'm always interested mm-hmm. in the extent to which women have been prepared mm-hmm. for marriage in terms of sex education, and mm-hmm. then also going back to their preparation for menstruation.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of preparation?
Well, I had older sisters. I had no problem. Mm-hmm. They always told me. Same like when I was getting married. Grace gave me the... Not that I wasn't perfectly innocent, because I was 29 years old, mm-hmm. but she told me the precautions or what I should do, and that I shouldn't wait and have a family, which we had already discussed between mm-hmm. us. We wanted to wait a couple years at mm-hmm. least and have a family, because as it was, we didn't have a house. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any place. And my folks had left us, my mother at the time, when she passed on, she left the two houses mm-hmm. there, and we lived in the front house with my other sister, mm-hmm. and her husband was in the service.
Now, what about in terms of menstruation? Was that Grace or Rosie who?
No, Grace. Grace, you? The older one, yes.
And do you remember how old you were when you then began to start menstruation?
I was about 12 or 13.
How did you feel about it when it began?
Well, I accepted it. Because it was growing up, I accepted it all part of life. Mm-hmm. It didn't bother me. I know I didn't feel well, but it didn't bother me. I wasn't opposed to it, or it didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't resent it or anything like that.
And by the time you started, you were fully prepared and knew what to do.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Because I remember Grace coming over and telling me. Now you're going, you're 12 years old, and you're developing, and this and that and the other. She says, you should carry this in your purse all the time, and get wrapped up in something or other. I remember her telling me, you should always have it with you. She says, haven't you been feeling bad? Don't you feel headaches or anything? I don't remember really whether I did carry it around or whether I didn't, but I know she was the one that told me most of it. Just the same when I was getting married, she's the one. In fact, she went with me to Santa Barbara and stayed with me there till we got married. Then she came home.
Oh. Hmm. Now, was there anything else on those subjects before we, because what I thought we could do then is then start with your leaving Hawking and going to Allen's and then your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But there were just those things that I realized that we hadn't covered when...
No, outside of the friendship with the girls there, and there was a lot of men, and the way Mexican and Italian and all mm-hmm. that, and women, and they mm-hmm. blend in. There was no... only thing, I didn't see too many colored people.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly Mexican and Italian and that sort of thing.
Would you say, by the time you left Lockheed, what percentage of the women would you say were Mexican at
Lockheed? Oh, God, at least half, if
mm-hmm.
not more.
Mm-hmm.
At least half, if not more.
And were they mainly younger women or older?
No, I'd say they were all in their 20s,
mm-hmm.
not no teenagers,
yeah.
in their 20s up there. More responsible mm-hmm. is what the way they tried to
mm-hmm.
get it.
Now, what about, that was the other thing I forgot, when Molly got married. I mean, here you had been so close all of these years. How did it mm-hmm. feel to you when she got married?
Well, I was her maid of honor, and she knew I was going to get married when Alex would come back.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that happened is she beat me to it,
because
mm-hmm. she got married in September. I stood up for her and everything, and then I got married. No, she didn't get married. I got married in
mm-hmm.
September. She got married in December the previous year,
mm-hmm.
and I got married the following September. That was the only difference.
In what way did your relationship change after she got married?
Well, I don't think it changed that much outside of, we even went out as couples together. We used to take vacations together till she started getting a little too rich and we couldn't keep up with
mm-hmm.
it. So we started kind of,
mm-hmm.
making excuses and mm-hmm. that, and she understood.
Well, and how about before Alex came back and you married? She'd been married for almost 9 months before
mm-hmm.
that. Would you still go out with her?
No,
before?
No. But we'd see each
yeah.
other. We'd see each other quite a bit. And we'd talk on the phone. In fact, we still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
The week don't go by before I call her or mm-hmm. she'll call me from the office, or I'll call her at the office
mm-hmm.
or I'll call her at home or something.
Well, that's what I was wondering, how you felt about her marriage and how it changed. It seems like you were so close.
Mm-hmm.
And very often with young women who are so close, when one of them marries before the other, there's sort of a feeling of loss.
Mm-hmm. No, I think the fact was that we were so involved in so many things.
Mm-hmm.
And we always dated, and we always went here, and we went there. That, I don't think it bothered either one of us. Outside of the fact that I say that later on, to this day, at the beginning, our friendship was still close.
Mm-hmm.
We'd take off the family and go together here, go there. They had a boat. They bought a boat, and when they had to clean it, all that, they brought it to our backyard here, and both the men worked in it. But when they bought the great big 45, 48-footer sleep bay, well, then that wasn't in our...
It was out of your calendar.
Right. We'd go once in a great while, but not very often.
Uh-huh. Now, getting back to when you, right before you left Lockheed and went to Allen's,
mm-hmm.
you were saying last time that part of it was that you always liked the beauty
mm-hmm.
business and
mm-hmm.
really... also saw that the war, that this was temporary
mm-hmm,
to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
When you were thinking about what you wanted to do in terms of getting into another line of work, was it going back to being an operator that you were thinking of?
No, because Molly, being in the executive end, or the, what would you call it, selling and all that, she told me, and she more or less in conversation, to try and get into that end because there was a lot of money to be made in that. She wanted me, really, she wanted me to go in as a sales lady.
Mm-hmm.
But I never did like to go drive, go from house, shop to shop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I never did go for that. I wouldn't mind staying one place and
mm-hmm.
selling from a store. But I didn't like traveling from place to place.
Mm-hmm.
So then she went on to work in it. And then afterward, when they had the opening for Desk Girl,
mm-hmm.
then I started in as a desk girl.
Now, what did that mean? Was that basically office work?
No, desk girl in a beauty shop. You take the appointments, schedule, see that they're right. Maybe you'd help with a little bit of the bookkeeping of the girls, how much they made, how many tints, how many dyes, whatever. Kept a schedule, see, because they would get, I think it was 40 and 60%.
Oh, now, this sounds like this must have been quite a large place then.
Oh, yes. He had, I'd say at least 8 operators. Mm-hmm. That was in the girls' shop, and one or two men would work there. Then he had a shop, strictly a men's shop, that did women's hair, but only men worked there up on the next floor. So he had quite a business going.
Oh, I see. And then in addition to that, he had products that he was selling?
His own, yes.
Oh, I see. Now, how did you feel about going in then as a desk girl as compared to continuing it to be an operator?
I enjoyed it because someone would call on the phone. It was to my advantage and to his that I knew the work. Mm-hmm. They would call up and say, well, I need this or I need that. And I could suggest something. Or they'd come in and they would ask for something. I could look at them and tell them, don't you think you need this, or you might need a trim, or how about that, or would maybe a manicure.
Mm-hmm.
I could much easier sell the stuff and help the girls along.
What was your thoughts about your future in terms of working at that point?
Well, I figured, like I had plans to advance myself, go into the wholesale land, which is where Molly was working.
Mm-hmm.
He had a large wholesale place there on the Low State Building up on the 11th floor. And I hoped someday to work myself into that. I didn't know how because I just started as a girl, desk girl, but I knew that I could learn the products from the bottom up and learn the prices. And as the stock would come into the beauty shop, well, I knew what this was and what this permanent was sold for. And so I was actually learning it.
Learning the kind of the business
Right.
Did you have any ideas at that point about going to business college or pursuing it in that fashion? Did you feel the need for any of that?
No, the only thing I really felt afterward when they took me into the working in the office, I needed work in bookkeeping.
Mm.
And I went to night school.
And when was that? That was quite a bit later then, wasn't it? Because that would have been after you were married?
Yes, it was after we were married, because in fact my husband didn't even know I had changed jobs.
Oh.
And he'd get a day off, he'd take a prisoner, you know, from go pick up a prisoner or something, and he'd stop by to see me there at the desk, because he'd just walk in, hi, how are you, and take off again, because I would only see him weekends.
Uh-huh.
And he came in one day, and he saw a different person at the desk, and he went up to her and said, where's Margie? And she says, who? So then he explained, oh, she doesn't work here anymore. And this girl didn't know where I was or anything. The manager wasn't there, so he had no idea where I was.
Now, how did you end up moving then from the desk to the office job?
He offered, the owner offered me, he said he needed a switchboard operator and like a receptionist.
Mm-hmm.
If I would like to try it.
Mm.
And I said, sure, why not? He says, well, you'll get a little more money. And I got along very well. See, I had such close contact with his secretary, with his bookkeeper, because I had to turn in the records to him. And many times I would walk from Eastern Columbia over to the Low State to take the records. So I knew them all. And
it would really mean a transition away from closer relationships with the beauty operator end of it.
But you still were very close because I was there, and it's a wholesale house. The beauty operators come in there to buy.
I see.
So you're still very close with it.
Right.
Yes, and I still made use of my knowledge. What I learned over there actually helped me to be over here, because then the salesman, I could relate to them as to what the girls actually liked as far as the products were concerned, and what they didn't like of them and why.
Mm-hmm.
So in the long run, that training over there really helped me a lot for my future.
Now, when you first started, after you left Lockheed, Did you, what sort of pay did you get compared to what you've been making at Lockheed? Do you remember?
The salary, I don't remember at all. We were trying, my husband and I were talking about it, and we were trying. In fact, I looked and looked to see if I had any check stubs.
But it was definitely lower than you've been making at Lockheed.
Yes, when I went as a desk girl, yes. But when I went over to the wholesale house, I think I got almost equivalent to what I was making at Lockheed.
Now, as a desk girl, you would be on a weekly salary. Would you get tips?
No. No, just the operators. The only advantage I had is that I had anything done to me free.
Oh.
The girls were more than happy to fix my hair, fix my nails twice a week or whenever I had a chance, during my lunch hour or anything. I should have pulled that thing over here.
Now, it seems like it was in about 46 then that you married. It was actually after the war had ended.
I've got the date right here.
Oh. So if you got married in September 45, that was almost exactly a month after VJ Day.
Yes, and I was already working over there.
And you'd been there a couple months maybe.
Around maybe a little bit longer, but about that time.
Now, tell me, you said that your mother died before you married.
Before I got married.
How did that come
about? Cerebral hemorrhage. Severe heart attack, nerve hemorrhage.
Now, was that sudden?
Yes. No, I shouldn't say she hadn't been sick in the sense of the word, but she had a history of heart problem. She had had one attack where she was paralyzed all one side, and she came out of it. She had therapy, and she worked out of it, and she was perfectly all right. But the doctor always told her that if she would have another one, she would either be a vegetable or she would die. And she always, her faith was so strong, she'd pray that she would be taken. She didn't want to be a burden to anybody. In fact, she always say if when all my children get married, I'm going to go live with the sisters. I don't want to be a burden to anybody. She'd always, she'd tell us that there was nothing she held against any of us, but that's what she wanted to do. That's what she wanted. So we were sitting around, Rose and her and I, because Rosie was living with us, and she said, I don't feel good. She says, I've got a headache. I think I'll lie down for a while, and that was it. She went into her room to lie down, and we heard her gasping, you know, and we went in there, called the ambulance and everything, she was gone.
Now, how did you take all that?
Well, naturally, it was pretty hard on all of us, and I was actually the oldest single one. Rose was there, but I was the oldest one of the with the boys on her, and they were all gone. So it was pretty rough because, I had to notify all the kids and let them know, and then Rose had to tell her husband, and so it was rough. It was pretty hard.
Now, were they given leaves to come back then?
I think Leo was, but not Eddie. Eddie was in some godforsaken place on ship. And Jimmy, he came home. He was in the Army. And he came home.
And so at that point, it was you and Rose. And your older sister had...
Grace. She had remarried.
Remarried and moved out of the house.
Oh, yeah.
And before your mother died, had you already planned on marrying?
Yes. And my mother always told me, in fact, she made it clear to me, like as if she had a premonition. We've always said, if something happens to me, don't postpone your wedding. You get married. I don't want you to stay alone. Get married. You've got your mind made up. You're going to marry this man. Get married. She'd always bring that up repeatedly. So we've always said, could she have had a premonition that she wasn't going to see me get married?
Now, when you set the date of the September date, was that an arbitrary date just in terms of when Alex was going to be returning, or had he been back for a while?
He was in R&R in Santa Barbara. But we were going to get married, not immediately when he'd get out, later on, mm-hmm. but we were going to get married. But since he was going to be there in Santa Barbara for a while, well, we discussed it. I could have a couple of weeks from work, and I could spend it there in Santa Barbara. He could get a place, and we could stay there. So, and since we decided that the quieter the better, no, mm-hmm. nothing at all.
Well, tell me about your wedding. Who was there then?
My sister, just Grace went, mm-hmm. and Rose stayed and take care, because Grace had two little boys then. So Rose stayed home and babysat. And my brothers were all gone. So I got together one night, you know, like a goodbye from my girlfriends, and they gave me sort of a little shower. Mm-hmm. Nothing much, because we were pretty sad.
Mm-hmm.
It was very hard on all of us. So we got together and had like a little shower. Molly and several of the girls came over, and we mm-hmm. sat around, gad, played cards.
Mm-hmm.
And they all kept saying, well, if we knew exactly when you were getting married, maybe we could drive down and see you. Mm-hmm. But we didn't know for sure the date, because I still had to, I was going with a week in advance and a week afterward, so I could get my blood and all those things
sure.
over there. So we didn't know when the priest would be able to work us in, or where, or what. We didn't know anything mm-hmm. for sure. So we figured, this girl's driveway over there. We actually couldn't afford to have a big thing. So why, you know, get them way over there, and be rather embarrassing not to feed them and not to have something. So very quiet. It was a chapel there at the Biltmore.
In Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At the Biltmore there in Santa Barbara. And the captain gave me away.
Mm-hmm.
And the priest there married. My husband had his best man. My sister, his friend there in his army was the best man. My sister was my maid of honor,
mm-hmm.
Gracie.
And was he in uniform?
Yes.
And what did you wear?
A suit.
Mm-hmm.
And a hat. That's all. Very, very quiet, very mm-hmm. nothing. My sister kept telling me, well, you don't have to buy your gown. Why don't you wear mine? I thought it'd be kind of silly, me just to put a long white dress on, just to walk down the aisle of this small little chapel, come out by myself, go and change. I just didn't see any sense in it. And Rose kept trying to talk me into it. And for a long, long time, she always reminded me, you wouldn't even wear my wedding gown. But I thought it was kind of silly.
Yeah.
Just my sister and I. And so, you know, some people that could afford it. There was another buddy of my husband's that got married while we were there. They had a big buffet, big wedding cake and the whole thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't very well invite our girlfriends, a couple of friends,